Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Short Coat Podcast, a production of the students at the University of Iowa, Carver College of Medicine, and its Writing and Humanities program. I'm Dave Etler. Before we start the show today, let me remind you that you can always communicate with us on Facebook, Twitter, at theshortcoat.com. We'd love to get a voicemail message from you at 347-SHORT-CT, 347-746-7828. And this week, I'd like to extend a special welcome to anyone who's come to us via our new partners at the Student Doctor Network, and who will be publishing our little show on their homepage every week.
Awesome.
Yay.
Which is pretty amazing. Let me introduce my co-hosts. We've got Corbin Weaver.
Hello.
We've got Marcus Torral.
Yo, yo, yo.
Goes by Mark.
Yeah. But you can call me whatever
you want. You can call you Marcus. Yeah. We've got Aline Sanduk. And we've
got...
Hi, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to short your...
That's right.
It's an important part.
It is. And Casey McCleary.
Soon to be internet celebrity.
Yeah, well, we're on our way to the big time. How's your week, y'all?
It's good.
People at Student Doctor Network want to know, how was your week?
I'm totally fine with the unseasonable warmth.
Yeah.
56 right now in Iowa. Like, mid-December's fine.
Oh, man, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's been beautiful.
Come to Iowa. It's not that bad.
Beautiful Iowa. Stressful at all?
Not as much as next week. We have 1 week of classes left until we are done with didactics, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. All y'all are M2s.
One test more.
And at Iowa, the clinical curriculum begins in after 18 months of basic science.
Mm-hmm.
And in less than 1 week, you'll be done with all that classroom stuff, or a lot of it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And you're off to go see patients.
Yay!
They're letting us loose.
I know.
You scared? Does it make you nervous?
Yes.
Yes.
It'll be interesting because the hospital isn't used to, like, brand new students coming in the middle of the year. They're used to a very set schedule of everyone in the summer doesn't really know what's going on, and they train them and bring them up to speed. That's when the new residents come in. But I think it'll be kind of weird with people.
Maybe it's a good idea to stagger it a little bit. You know, like,
there's this whole thing called the bulge too. Yeah. I don't know. Since I'm doing research, I've kind of just, like, not thought about it, but
yeah, it's
a source of stress for sure.
Yeah, apparently we're in the middle. We have just begun the new curriculum at Iowa. Every once in a while, the LCME says, "Hey, you guys got to change everything."
Mm-hmm.
And so
gotta make a change.
They strongly suggest it anyway. And so we did that, and now you guys and the old people in the old curriculum, they'll all be starting to go through the rotations, the clerkships together, and it's called the bulge because there's going to be a lot of you.
I kind of imagine it's going to be like that turn of the century.
Oh,
no,
Y2K.
No music.
Wait, like,
no,
so there's going to be, like, monkeys throwing bones in front, like, of a giant slab.
Yeah, and there's going to be that circus music.
Oh, there's
that is really not what I was thinking. I was like 2001 Space Odyssey.
You're thinking of the wrong.
I'm not quite sure how your analogy fits in, Casey.
I thought that's what she was talking about. Okay, sorry, what were you talking about?
The moment has passed.
I'm sorry.
All of these,
you're thinking of, like, the British comedy, like, chasing,
like,
each other back and forth.
Yeah. Like, it's going to be all of us bumping into each other. Some of us are going to be spinning out of control. And some of us are just going to be moving too quickly from one side of the screen to the other.
Oh, like a Scooby-Doo chase scene when they, like, go in one door and then they come out the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing about that. One, and that I just thought of, probably others have thought of it before, but... I might as well pretend I'm a genius right now.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that one must do during clerkships is sort of make themselves known to the faculty and to the residents and all that kind of stuff, because they want to assess your learning and all this kind of
that
stuff.
That is perfectly the opposite of my objective. My objective... My plan is...
Who are you again?
Perfect, yes.
Do you even go here?
Keep your head down.
Just blend perfectly into the background so that I can tip the balance of learning versus being pimped heavily on the side of learning and less.
Well,
there's a consideration in the fact that maybe it's not so important that you're known to your to the attendings in a specialty that you don't really care about that much. You know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't care about all the specialties, but if you're just like, you know, moderately interested in one rotation, it's not so important. You know, that's why you should schedule your important rotations after the bulge.
Agreed.
Well, the thing I was going to say was that, you know, they want to know what you know. And the only way to do that is to talk, but and to take chances and to be and to take risks.
But on the battlefield,
make mistakes,
get messy,
yeah.
Miss Frizzle.
Yeah.
Wow, Miss Frizzle reference so early in the show.
There's that's
Are
always okay.
Watching the show, even old enough to remember.
Oh, totally. Yes.
If they're not, if you don't know who Miss Frizzle is, get stop out. Everything bet, right now and go watch.
I bet they're
every
all watching. I bet they're all even on the show because of the episode where they shrink the bus down and they go through the human body and swim through the veins and the arteries.
That was such a good episode.
It was great.
Man, you derailed yourself with Miss Frizzle right there.
The seeds of the future, Dr. Corbin Weaver, were planted when Chucky. No, I'm thinking.
Oh, what? Oh, that's no, Rugrats.
Yeah, he grows a watermelon.
Watermelon in his stomach.
Yeah,
stomach.
It's no,
Arnold. Arnold is the one who turns orange. And
yeah,
to go find out why he's turning.
Oh my God, we're so derailing.
We've got our Rugrats references. We've got our
nobody knows what anybody's
Who's
talking
Ralphie
about.
Ralphie
from though? Ralphie from Magic School
from
Bus.
From Christmas
Maybe
Story.
Maybe that's a Simpsons episode. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, people.
Anyway, so.
No, he's in a different
about?
Book.
All we do is study now.
I was back on Sesame All Street. Anyway, what were you saying?
Yeah, what are we talking about?
What were you saying?
Oh, I think when you're new in an environment, it kind of makes sense to me to, like, let other people test the waters a little bit. Let them sort out, you know, the first few steps. Figure out if the water's hot, if it's too cold. And then maybe at the opportune moment,
but the rotations are so short.
So one thing I liked about the rotations that I did before I kind of split off is that you get the chance of being jumbled up randomly with classmates you might not have interacted with very much. So I thought it was enjoyable because I got to kind of hang out with people that I hadn't had a chance to meet, and it was great, really.
Well, I have good news about the stress of going into the... I have good news about that. Your misery that you will experience will not kill you. There's a Lancet study published this week in which 1 million middle-aged British women were followed for 10 years.
Oh, my God.
You
I
have
was
my
so
attention.
Bad for those researchers.
For 10 years. I just realized that how I wrote that down...
Well, there's
Sounds
a confounding
very creepy.
Factor right there. British people aren't capable
yeah,
of
Yeah, plus they're being followed by creepy scientists. Anyway, happiness, they discovered, does not correlate with health or longevity, contrary to popular belief. There is a widespread belief that stress and unhappiness causes diseases.
Maybe only among the Brits.
they are a stiff
That's just like standard issue.
They are a stiff upper lip people, aren't they? So one of the concerns that the researchers expressed about this was the tendency to blame the sick for being so negative and for causing their own problems. So so then it's the sort of like, okay, well, you should be cheerful or die. You know, kind of message.
You should work for hospice.
Like, Republican platform, basically.
So anyway, yeah, you know.
Interesting.
That's good news.
Yeah, I mean, actually, so I remember when I was an undergrad, I was a medical anthropology major, and there was a book published, who I can't remember, some doctor published, you know, basically BS research on, you know, patients just needing to essentially buck up and be happy, and then, you know, they'll get better, which, I mean, obviously is super problematic.
And wrong.
When it comes to, you know, just standard issue medical problems, but also, like, especially psych problems, like, you know, you think about it, it's like how often do people with psych problems, which are medical problems, just get told to, you know, just change your perspective,
just be completely different than who you are.
Right. Like, just be positive about it, you know, and just kind of totally absurd.
But, you know, this study says that there's no correlation between health and wellness and happiness, so.
Well, I thought it was, what's the end point? Was it early mortality?
Or like, yeah.
So you don't die earlier.
Mortality and
less happy.
Yeah, and overall, yeah.
Well, I think the study is based on the assumption that happiness equals an absence of stress.
You think you can be happy but very stressed?
Well, yeah. There's different kinds of stress, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you learn, I remember in psychology from like 25 years ago that, you know, even positive events cause stress in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Like going home for the holidays.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Once again.
She's very overstimulating.
You should have gone back home with Casey. I hear her family's awesome on the holidays.
They're pretty fun.
No, mine is too. I don't, in case my family is listening to this right now. Okay, Corey, can you edit this out?
Great, once again, Aline's back.
Calling the shots.
Classic Aline.
Oh, bummer.
Don't edit it, Corey. Leave this in.
There's two things the study didn't manage to determine. First of all, they didn't follow any men, so. Oh. And second of all, it doesn't address other risks that, doesn't address other risks like suicide, alcoholism, risky behaviors, things like that. But basically, the theory is
that. How can you measure mortality without putting that in, putting those kind of considerations into.
Well, they must have could they have filtered out? It's a good point. I don't know.
Wait, how long did they follow them for?
10 years.
Well, I guess it's possible. How many people did they study?
1,000,000.
What age did they start at? Do you know?
There's got to have been someone who, you know. Huh. I have a lot of.
They did, but it wasn't statistically significant.
You know.
Not statistically significant.
Died.
Like killed themselves or were in a traffic accident that killed them or something like that?
Surely there must have been one or two in a population of 1,000,000.
It's a hard thing to tease out in general, right? Like, how do you even measure happiness?
Naturally,
truly objectively.
Is it like self-determined happiness or like. And what's the difference between happiness and joy and.
And it's not, and happiness is not a binary state.
Right.
Right.
You are not either unhappy or happy.
Right.
Right. And they're like confounders up to wazoo, of course.
Mm-hmm. Do they use some type of like personality assessment or mood assessment?
I don't know. I'll put the link up.
Self-reported.
I'll put the link up on the website and you can do your own research. Okay? For God's sake.
We're going to look into this.
What else you got, Dave?
Why'd you give this to all the research people?
Yeah. Hey, you remember Pharma Bro?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember.
How can we forget Farmer Bro?
Good old Martin Shkreli is back in the news for having purchased a one-of-a-kind, unheard Wu-Tang Clan album that was until recently stored in a vault in a hotel in Cairo.
He's like a comic book villain.
He really is.
So I don't know what he is exactly.
He is. You know. Okay, so
I saw a pretty funny meme of him floating around, actually.
Well, let me start with Pharma Bro came to our attention a few episodes ago, and if you get your news only from the Short Code podcast, you'll remember us talking about him a couple of times. He was the head of Turing Pharmaceuticals, bought Daraprim, a drug that's used to treat something or other for people who have compromised immune systems, basically.
Yeah. Histoplasmosis.
And then raised the price like 5,000% or whatever. And then he caved to public pressure for being a jerk, and then he said, screw it, and raised the price again.
Didn't he try and get an interview with Bernie Sanders?
He did. He tried to get it in, and Bernie's like, no, I don't think so.
Bernie took all the money that he donated to his campaign and gave it to a hospital.
Well,
which made me happy.
It turns out that the March 2014 album by the Wu-Tang Clan, Once Upon a Time in Shaolin, has only one copy and was to be sold to the highest bidder. The terms of the sale were that the buyer had total freedom to do whatever he wanted, whatever he or she wanted with the album. You could release it free on the internet. You could run it over with your car. Doesn't matter. You could do whatever you want, but you can't sell the album commercially. So Pharma Bro bought the album, according to insiders, for $2 million. Bloomberg says that he hasn't listened to it yet, saving it for a rainy day, but says, quote, I could be convinced to listen to it earlier if Taylor Swift wants to hear it or something like that.
Don't do it, Taylor.
Oh, God, this guy's
Taylor Swift needs to write a nasty song about him.
The great part about this, I was just going to include this as a, you know, because it's our friend Martin, but it turns out that there is a clause in the agreement between the Wu-Tang Clan and Shkreli. It says the buying, this is awesome.
Never
the buying party agrees that at any time during the stipulated 88-year period, the seller may legally plan and attempt to execute one heist or caper to steal back Once Upon a Time in Shaolin, which, if successful, will return all ownership rights to the seller. Said heist or caper can only be undertaken
by current, currently active.
Said heist or caper can only be undertaken by currently active members of the Wu-Tang Clan and or actor Bill Murray with no legal repercussions.
Oh, man, I hadn't heard that.
Bill Murray, if you're listening to our little show, please do this. Mm. Please. I'll owe you forever.
I don't even know if I like Wu-Tang.
Could you imagine?
We need a glimmer of hope in the world. Bill Murray, save us.
Going to get a midnight snack and there's like Bill Murray.
And the Wu-Tang Clan.
And a black knit cap and black turtleneck flashlight.
That could happen anyway with Bill Murray, right, though. You know, like, that could
apparently
just
that's what he does, is he just goes around to parties. And...
Well, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
if I can get away with it,
it's amazing. Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, my God.
So there you go.
Give us more, Dave.
Not to mention that Pharma Bro, I mean, the stock of Turing like plummeted precipitously during the whole thing. I don't know if it's gained its momentum back.
I don't think it jumped back. Plus, one of their competitors, it provoked such a rage in the capitalist market that a competitor came out with like a $5 version of it.
Yes.
Oh, awesome. Like shortly thereafter to undercut their business.
Yep. Excellent.
Capitalism does work.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Rage.
Sometimes.
Rage is an important...
Only if you rebel against it.
It's true, though. That's
only if you co-opt its mechanisms to put people like Martin...
Shkreli in their place.
In his place.
So think about that. Think about how you can rage against the machine, people.
Mm-hmm. While operating within
the machine.
Indeed.
Exactly. You guys, who here is into body art?
What's body art? Like painting on a body?
No, like tattoos, piercings.
I think tattoos are sweet.
I have a piercing.
Do you have any?
No.
Do you have any?
Do you want any?
I do.
Are you going to peel them off your body and give them to
me? I've actually considered getting a tattoo before, but I'm just actually really concerned about the implications of tattoos and working in healthcare.
Oh, well, just have it so you can cover it up.
Yeah, but
put
like...
put some concealer on it.
There are some people who have them. A lot of people consider them unprofessional, but
it's becoming less common. If you wear them under an article of clothing that is covered by a bathing suit, I think it should be good.
But like if you don't, what Unless if you do want to have it in a place that's visible, you know?
I want
like,
to get a tribal tattoo on my shoulder and arm and like
are you,
part of this chest.
Are you from a tribe?
The tribe of the
damn
shark.
Well, might as well be.
I feel like that
Here
might.
Here we go.
Oh,
I knew this was going to happen.
God.
I knew this was going to happen. John, for our listeners, our
good old John
in our student studio audience, John Pienta just took off his shirt and showed us his boobs. Which are covered with tattoos.
Also,
tattoos. Well, you can combine your interests in both body art and your work as a doctor. Actually, this is great. Founded this Dr. Lee Ponsky of the Cleveland or University Hospital of Cleveland's Urologic Oncology Unit founded a tattoo parlor that specializes in both creating body art and in removing it. Yeah. He said he noticed
for those really rough nights.
Right. Yeah. I don't think you're supposed to do it within 24 hours.
One stop shop.
But he noticed, during his encounters with patients, he noticed an increase. Obviously, more people getting tattoos and things like that these days. And he started asking them questions about their body art. Some people, he said, were happy with their tattoos, and other people regretted their tattoos and wanted a way to remove them without going to the doctor. So he decided to open this clinic. And among other things, we've got services that include tattoos by artists and then tattoo removal by the MDs.
I'm confused about how that's
them.
Not going to the doctor.
Well, you go to your tattoo to get to... I mean, I guess making an appointment with a dermatologist or some... Okay. You know, whatever. You can already go to the tattoo
Stuffed
parlor,
shirt.
Apparently, if you trust tattoo
it sounds like
artists more
guy.
Than you trust doctors, then that might be something. I don't know.
It sounds like this guy is at the point of care. He is at the bedside of tattoo provision.
I see.
And he is explicitly a person who it serves to remove tattoos.
Because if you go to a dermatologist, they do a lot of other things. that maybe. May or may not include
right. They're removal. Just, but it, they make so much more money by offering a removal service. Yeah. Is what it is.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, they do. They also remove tattoos for those who are involved with gangs, prostitution, human trafficking, people who have been perhaps tattooed against their will.
Yeah,
that's a special service that they provide. And they also do things like 3D nipple tattoos for those who have had mastectomies, so reconstructive.
Actually, I saw that, and they're quite good. It's hard to tell the difference.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, you just blew my mind. So wait, can you wear that out in public?
No. Casey.
What do you mean? Can you wear what out in public?
Your 3D nipple tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Legal. Yeah. Yeah. Would Instagram object?
Yeah. To your
3D. Jeez.
It's like those bikinis that have like nipples painted or like printed on them.
And I don't think I've seen one of those.
Yeah, you can get them to match
I don't think you can get them
to match your skin tone.
That's so hilarious.
It just looks like you don't have a top on, but it's a bikini and they can't do
or
anything
just,
about
what,
it.
Go to Europe.
Or just go to Europe where people aren't Puritans as much.
Confession time. I was a smoker. Sometimes I still do, say at a bar. Mm-hmm. Mm. And this past weekend, I went to visit some friends who are smokers, and so I partook.
Oh, sure.
Of both regular cigarettes and e-cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, those can cause popcorn lung disease.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
First findings are coming out.
Nick, so these popcorn lung disease came to.
Casey, what are you trying to say to me, Corey?
Casey's drinking a bottle of marbles as part of the show. Thank you. It came to light a few years ago. I think some person was eating mega amounts of popcorn and contracted cancer, lung cancer, because of the flavorings contained.
Oh, yeah. I thought did that was from the factory workers.
Did
not
they
ask some guy eating a lot of it?
Aspirate the butter?
Is I think the point is if you eat so much microwave popcorn to the extent that this person did, you're going to breathe in a lot of what?
How much
diacetyl acetonin? Acetone. 2-3 pentanidine. Anyway,
as someone who eats a lot of popcorn, this is a
very concerning
for my life.
So
yeah.
this person ate a mess of popcorn. I mean, just,
how much did they?
You don't know anything about my life, Dave.
I don't even know.
Sure.
But these e-cigarettes contain these flavoring chemicals as well, because they come with mm-hmm. You can get. There was actually a popcorn flavored one. There was cotton candy. There's all this kind of stuff.
Okay, wait, but no, I thought that popcorn lung disease was, made from, or was named from, factory workers.
Not
one guy who ate that much popcorn. Don't freak people out.
That could be. I just don't, that's just where I got it from, anyway.
Sure. So,
well done for setting the record straight. As usual, Casey is the conscience of the show.
That's scary.
Yeah. But, I have to say, though, I really enjoy the e-cigarette thing.
Yeah. Some of them look like lightsabers. Is that
they
part
do.
Of your
and then I was walking
like
down the streets of New York City.
Like
I was walking down the streets of New York City on my way to see the tree at the Rockefeller Center.
The things.
And I saw this guy. I saw this dude carrying this vape setup. And it looked like, I don't know, it looked like a car part. Huge and had lumps all over, metallic bumps all over it.
And
then he blew out this giant cloud of it was like a, I don't know, it was tremendous.
Like semi or something.
Huh. And you're
the
sure?
ones I the ones I tried were like the little ones.
Are e-cigarettes the same as vaping?
Yes.
Or is that different? Okay.
Well, some of the e-cigarettes are not technically vaporizing. Oh. They're still combusting to an extent.
Yeah.
The cheaper ones you buy aren't true vaporizers.
Okay.
Even though they're kind of marketed as them.
Yeah, it may also depend on what kind of flavoring and whether you use flavoring. If you don't do flavoring, it might not be as big a deal. I don't know.
So I was living the vape life.
Okay.
This past weekend.
It's funny that you bring it up. Well, it's not, because we actually talked about it in one of our small groups this week. And,
Your small group meets on the weekend?
Yeah.
You guys must be close.
Go They're above intense. And beyond.
You are intense.
We take it very
It's my roommate.
We take discussion of current event topics very seriously.
Yes.
There's really no medical recommendations, right? Basically right now, since there's no research really on, we have our preliminary popcorn lung data, of course, but which could go places.
Yeah.
But there's no, you know, like there's not any good recommendations right now for what we should say to our patients. So we're just like, hands off. Like, we're not going to say you should do it, but we can't say definitively that it's bad for you.
Yeah.
So we're going to just like pass the buck on this one. Yeah.
Well,
because we don't know.
My friends who were, who lead the vape life. What I'm just going to call it from now on.
Lead the vapor.
They lead the vape life.
Chasing the vapor trail.
They had decided to do this because it was healthier. And I, of course...
I don't think there's any doubt on that.
Not a lot.
They've broken apart, like, the chemicals contained. And I think that they contain less total different types of chemicals. Right. And the ones that have been most strongly linked to as carcinogens are reduced, as you might expect, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So there's very preliminary evidence. But the question is... At what point does that reach,
you shouldn't
public health safety?
Right, you shouldn't do this evidence.
I mean, how bad are cigarettes? Are cigarettes also, so bad that even when you reduce that stuff, it's not such a jump in health?
If you have like 100% chance of
unknown.
Getting lung cancer,
and also, I mean, for the youth. The youths, they will. They think it's a gateway to actually... I mean, you know, I'm like not all about the gateway argument.
Everybody
people
like
love
potential.
People love the gateway
argument.
The
gateway
is stupid ADH medications.
And based on nothing. Or, it's based on correlations and it's stupid and
I mean,
I
don't
it.
Know anything about this gateway. I mean, I don't think you can blatantly say that all gateway arguments are like that because, I mean, I don't know anything about this gateway argument.
Okay, mostly the ones related to drugs.
Specifically.
Maybe you've heard of his cousin... The slippery slope.
The slippery slope fallacy.
I mean, I don't know. If the tobacco lobby's behind it, I'm not behind it. That's how I feel about it. You know, like...
100%.
Maybe that's not exactly logical, but... Yeah.
No, there's actually something called the scream factor in, like, the public health professional circle, where, like, when a new policy is passed and tobacco companies don't scream about it, they're like, oh, they must have something up their sleeve to scream about this. And when they get upset, that's when you know they're actually making a pact. It's real. Look it up.
That's interesting.
I will look it up.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure they play all sorts of games.
Oh, I guess there are also concerns about the e-cigarettes aren't, they don't deliver a consistent like amount of nicotine, so it's like kind of all over the place. It's like not very so you could be getting a ton or like just a little.
Well, and there's
and it's all the nicotine can be more concentrated as well with
sure.
the cigarettes.
There's so. Also the main issue that I mean we're talking about these we're referring to them as vaporizers, right? But in reality they're all very different. And like you're saying, there's the little ones you can buy. There's the actual device you can buy that you can like put tobacco into. There's all sorts of
other things
of types, and they're not all created equally. And it's unknown kind of how those fit together in terms of like health.
Yeah. So I'll say real quick before we move on why I don't like the gateway drug argument. So basically, it was initially thought up because there were some studies that showed that like most people who did cocaine or the sort of hard drugs had previously smoked marijuana, and so that's how marijuana became a gateway drug. But there's nothing that actually shows that
like
that's
a causative
reversed.
Relationship.
There's no causative relationship. Just because somebody used to smoke something doesn't mean it caused them to go to a higher thing because they didn't do any research on how many people do marijuana without moving on to a hard drug. And it is it is a lot of people. So that's why I don't like the idea of it for this like e-cig thing. Like it's just, there's no basis in reality. It's just this idea that people have in their heads.
I mean, to be fair to the argument that like, I would imagine that there's no research like you said, but like, I actually don't know if there is or is not research.
That's fair.
So,
what about
I mean, in the case of marijuana, it's clearly a fallacy.
Yeah.
But
the whole gateway
I don't know for this one, maybe.
The whole gateway the term gateway drug is political, I think.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But it's interesting that to me anyway, and it's interesting to me that, you know, for instance, we talked a couple of shows ago about opioid addiction and how the current epidemic of people addicted to opioids seems to be related to physicians' prescribing habits in the 90s and such when, you know, when opioids were pretty much handed out for any sort of pain. And, and
it's also mostly
so in a sense,
middle-aged white people now.
Right, right.
And so they want a more gentle war on drugs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now they care.
We want to be gentle on the white people. We're, We're fragile.
Now but it's
the,
them.
But the, you know, like in a sense, opioids prescribed are a gateway drug for heroin, which
well, sure,
right? I mean, if you want to,
but that's a different
that's,
argument.
That's a different. Sense, I mean, that's
mechanistically the same.
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. They're the same yeah. compounds.
It's the same thing,
chemically yeah. similar compounds. That's true.
Yeah. So if it was like marijuana and hyper marijuana, maybe.
Yeah.
Hypermarijuana.
What would hypermarijuana?
You'll just fall asleep. It's actually just a sedative.
But you'll create yeah, that.
And then you wake up and there's nothing in your fridge and you're like, what just happened?
But you will create yeah. one hell of an improvised bong before you before you pass out. Awesome. Oh dear.
So I read an article in the New York Times today uh-huh. about the Ebola saga continues, as it will, I'm sure, for a very long time. But so a lot of the reasons why Ebola was so hard to contain, besides just a lack of health infrastructure, was because of the cultural norms mm-hmm. around funeral rites and death and dying. And so specifically what I'm talking about in Liberia, death is kind of, ancestor or the dead are kind of, you know, put up on, you know, there's days to celebrate the dead and,
Very respected.
The funeral rites kind of include the washing of bodies, the visitation of bodies,
there's a lot of
kissing,
physical contact.
Yeah, physical yeah. contact with, bodies of the deceased. And so, obviously that's terrible for the containment of Ebola. And so basically what happened was the government ordered a stop to those kind of funeral practices and they began burning the bodies of the dead, which is a huge cultural taboo in a culture that values the dead so much. The physical grieving process and all that. So anyway, they hired a bunch of young men to burn the bodies. And now, after the bodies have been burned and Ebola is tapering down, these men are actually being ostracized from their communities
because for having done the terrible thing.
Yeah, for having broken this cultural taboo of
perpetrated these acts mm-hmm. that are offensive to people.
It's ironic in that they kind of
saved everybody.
Yeah, saved it. I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, there's a lot of complexity to it because in some ways, yes, they were the heroes of their communities by kind of like, it kind of made me think of like war heroes who, soldiers, for instance, do go and break a taboo, which is killing someone. For the good, supposedly, of their country, which, I mean, homicide is one of the universal
accepted.
Taboos.
Yeah.
Ideally for, like, ultimate peace is the argument that's made.
So, which is kind
of... But were these people, do you know if they themselves came up with the idea of burning the bodies? Was this something
the WHO was, like, said to the Liberian government.
So that's the issue. It's like a misunderstanding of these powerful regulatory agencies coming in.
It definitely didn't come from the people. Yeah. It probably never would have.
Right. Because you got to imagine that there's a way where you can obviously not do something where you're just burning the corpses of bodies, but still preventing
sure
the spread of disease.
I mean,
I'm not sure. I was going to say, I'm not sure what the alternative would be.
Very infectious diseases here, do we burn the bodies?
No. Well, I don't know. Do we?
I don't think so.
But here's the thing. I think as far as infrastructure goes and whatnot, I mean, I don't think they had a lot of good options.
Yeah, they couldn't wait to, you know, build up the whatever institutions or culture.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting too because not only are they dealing with the issues of being ostracized from their community, but they're also dealing with their own cultural, like, I mean, internal guilt about having burnt. First, they're seeing their loved ones, their neighbors, their friends. They physically burn the bodies of their neighbors, and also the cultural, you know, guilt of having broken a taboo and how terrible that is on top of being ostracized. And they're finding that actually a good chunk of these guys are struggling with, like, substance abuse disorders as a result.
Is that, like, a big deal to, like, cremation as opposed to burial? Is that, like, a big deal to a lot of people?
For some people,
here?
It is.
I mean, in this cult, in the Liberian culture it is.
It is.
It really depends is a really big deal. Yeah.
What about Western culture? Is it kind of all the same?
I feel like it's it's an elective thing, you know? Yeah.
Some people
would sort of prefer not to be cremated. Mm-hmm. They would prefer to be buried, and other people want to be... I'm sure Martin Shkreli would like to have his ashes sprinkled on Taylor Swift.
Oh, God. Oh,
with the soundtrack being the Wu-Tang Clan album.
Wow, that's the stuff
that's
of
the
nightmares.
Rainy Day Stadium.
You're welcome, Internet.
On that note...
Oh, it's that time again.
It is. I'm sorry. If you like what you heard today on the Short Code Podcast, leave us a review and some stars on iTunes or Stitcher. What did you think of today's show? Tell us at theshortcode.com, on Twitter, on Facebook. You can get in touch with us in any number of ways, but if you leave us a voicemail, I can play on the air by calling 347-SHORTS-T, 347-746-7828. That would eliminate many of my struggles to find content each week. The show is made possible by the strange world we live in and a generous donation by the Carver College of Medicine student government and the Writing and Humanities program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by C2C. Talk to you in 1 week.